Hey everybody, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Happy fucking Monday, baby. How was your weekend? Good? Mine was good. A lot of in-town shows, Laugh Factory, Improv, Comedy Store, Ice House. Just a great weekend in LA, you know? It's getting hot. Summertime's around the corner. Can you feel it, baby? Can you feel those summer vibes? Will Smith. Time to jam some Will Smith on the drive down the highway to the beach.
Summer, summer, summertime. It's a better to burn, get back to and unwind.
Are those the lyrics? Fuck. Will Smith is always one of those guys where I feel like I know every word of the song, and then I start singing it, and I'm like, oh, wait, I think I know like two of the lyrics. Maybe the chorus for sure, you know, like getting jiggy with it. Welcome to Miami, you know.
Just the two of us.
You know. It's the Wild Wild West. But who knows anything more than that? Will Smith does, because he wrote that shit. Today's episode is one of my favorite episodes that we've ever recorded. And that's why we're reposting it, because it was a great episode. And I don't know if you guys, you know, so many eps, some get lost in the shuffle. And when we have a good one, we like to re-throw it back up just to remind you how great the guest is, and it's nice to rehear some of these interviews for the second time. It's like seeing a great movie a second time. You're like, oh shit, I saw so many things I didn't see the first time. Our guest is Hasan Minhaj, that we recorded with Hasan last year at the Moon Tower Comedy Festival in Austin, Texas, when he was performing his show Homecoming King, a one-man show, which I got to see, which I tweeted out immediately after, was like, this is the greatest live show I've ever seen. Hasan is on some next level shit. That show, thankfully, got taped for a Netflix special that is coming out May 23rd, Homecoming King, on Netflix. And now you all can see it. If you didn't get to see him on his tour with the show, now you get to see it May 23rd on Netflix. Hasan, just this past weekend, also very much in the news. Obviously, he's a correspondent on The Daily Show, crushes it on there. But he hosted the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which the full thing is online. Just search it in, Hasan Minhaj, White House Correspondents' Dinner. He crushed it, man. It was poignant. It was smart. It was funny. He you know, he came after Trump in a very, you know, I thought fair way, you know, but definitely honest and sincere, which is what Hasan is. He's smart. He's cutting, and very much becoming the voice of our generation, which is huge. He's real likable, and he's fucking gets it, man, and he doesn't hold back. He crushed it. So look that up, and you know, in this episode, you really get his backstory and how he got into comedy, his family backstory, sharing the creation of his one-man show, Homecoming King, which again hits Netflix May 23rd. We talk sports, we talk comedy. It's just a great episode, and I'm pumped to re-release it, and the timing couldn't be better. So enjoy this one, and follow Hasan on Twitter at Hasan Minhaj, M-I-N-H-A-J. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy, at Funny Brad, at Ailen Podcast, Adam Ray Comedy, Brad Williams Comic on Instagram, aboutlastnightpodcast.com for all merch, hats, shirts. Hit us up online. Keep emailing us, aboutlastnightpod@gmail.com, with your comments and your favorite eps and your tweets. And we've got some more Fan of the Weeks coming up here in the next few weeks, as well as some cool podcast news and giveaways. So make sure you're subscribed on iTunes. Comment and rate us on the iTunes page. And make sure that you got this shit in your podcast app, phone, Android. Wherever you get the podcast, just get it. Android, iPhone, computer, get it, because so many great episodes coming up. Harlan Williams, Zac Efron, Jamie Kennedy, Mark Norman, Bert Kreischer. The list goes on and on. So make sure you subscribe on iTunes. And make sure you check out a new episode of Return of the Mac this Wednesday on Pop TV, 8:30. Appreciate all the love and support on that show. Still waiting here if we get a second season, but feeling good about it. The numbers are good. The show's hilarious. Return of the Mac, Pop TV, 8:30. Check it out. And tour dates. I'm in LA for a few more weeks until I go to Vegas for the Crapshoot Comedy Festival with Brad, May 18th through the 20th. Brad and I doing a live ALN with Chris Porter, Ryan Sickler, and Beth Stelling. So make sure you get your tickets for that festival at crapshootcomedy.com. Crapshoot Festival, CrapshootComedyFestival.com in Las Vegas, May 18th through the 20th. Brad Williams, where is he? I think he's off the road. He's in San Francisco this week. Brad is at Cobb's on May 3rd, Wednesday, and then at the Punchline later that week. So check all of Brad's tour dates at BradWilliamsComedy.com. Again, AdamRayTV.com from all my in-town LA shows. And then May 18th through the 20th, Crapshoot Comedy Festival, Brad Williams, Adam Ray, Las Vegas. And then May 30th through June 4th, I'm going to be at the Laugh Factory in Reno, Nevada. So if you live in or around Reno, Nevada, come out and see me, Laugh Factory. May 30th through June 4th, tickets at AdamRayTV.com. All right, now that we got the tour dates, the Twitter handles, the merch info, and the Joey Max show info out of the way, sit back, relax, and enjoy the About Last Night podcast, one of our favorite guests and favorite episodes, with the one and only Hasan Minhaj.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. It's about last night.
Well, Brad, we're in the lobby.
We're in the lobby of a hotel for the Moon Tower Comedy Festival.
Pretty cool.
This festival is in Austin, Texas. Austin, one of the best cities, man. It really is.
I went kayaking today.
That's a sentence you haven't said too often.
Ever. I literally, John Rudnitsky and I he goes, let's go to the Four Seasons and lay by the pool. He did it a couple of days ago, and I was like, that sounds like a great idea. Let's go get a drink, lay poolside. The weather is incredible. And we walk through there, and it's like this whole other, I walk in and I go, welcome to Jurassic Rich. Because everyone there's like a big field. There's groups of like fancy women with champagne. There were hammocks.
Hammocks.
And then you walk down the hill and there's a river. And by the way, John and I are walking down this hill, and it's a very steep hill, and we were walking very awkwardly. And I go, I feel like this is the hill you roll down kid style. And he goes, yeah, totally. And then we're halfway down. And he goes, should we do it? And I go, well, now we're halfway down. I feel like you need momentum.
Right.
If you're going to roll, start at the top. By the way, have you ever rolled down a hill?
Hell yes. It's the best. It was one of the things that I missed about
me. Do you go faster?
I have no idea. I didn't have a guy with me and my sister next to me do it with a fucking radar gun. So I'm not sure.
Nobody timed your hill rolls?
Yeah, no. I'm not sure. But, yeah. You mentioned that the Four Seasons Hotel had hammocks. Hammocks are one of those things where it's either means you're really rich or really poor.
There's no in between.
There's no in between with hammocks.
No middle class person has a hammock.
It's like you're either a hobo on an island or, which is the name of my next album.
It's either your bed or your or you fuck there if you're really rich.
Wow, fucking in a hammock. That would take more talent than I have. I don't know if you could pull
it
off.
Yeah, the true superstars fucking hammocks.
I mean, that's how you go to the major leagues. I guess the major leagues of fucking.
Well, I guess also if you're married and you've just run out of places, both on the body and geographically, to fuck, hammock seems like, because you have to challenge yourself.
Mm, yeah.
And if you've already done the butt,
I mean,
what's after butt? Hammock?
What's after butt?
What came first, the butt or the hammock?
Somehow I feel that in the topics of conversation with the couple and their sex life, they would fuck in the hammock before the butt. But I could be wrong. Hey!
Hasan.
Look who we're joined by.
Are you guys literally like recording live
right
now?
Yeah.
Yeah, but we'll hang for a second.
Yeah.
What's up, man?
How are you, dude?
Good to see you, man. You want to sit here?
Yeah, go for it.
Hey, are you Adam?
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, I work with Robbie.
Oh, great.
That's for Dan. Oh,
Yeah,
well,
can it be for the
9
too?
Or
oh, you guys just
fucking
around?
This
yeah, we just
kind of. Seven, but you want to
do
the
9
instead.
Is that long? Is that right?
Yeah, just cut.
Oh, really?
Just try this between the shows because we don't have to go for the 9.
We're starting. Thank you so much. We're starting.
Yeah. How are you, dude?
Dude, I just like literally just got it. It was one of those things where I was waiting to do the thing, and then I like, you know how you pass out, and then I woke and I'm like, fuck, and I got to come down and like.
Are you a big nap guy? Yeah.
Yeah. Are we starting?
Yeah, I like how you held the mic to the side like, dude, there's a lot of stuff I'll talk about. I won't talk about my nap habits. We're very on the record.
Fully off the record.
I'm a huge nap guy.
Yeah. When I have wanted to be a nap guy for the longest time, but I just can't. Unless I'm like dead to the world and like literally my body, like if I stay awake, like something will probably happen.
So what do you do during red eyes, or what do you do if you have like a late show.
Like cocaine.
Cocaine.
Just a lot of cocaine.
I wish I could be a cocaine guy.
Great.
I can't.
Yeah.
I had too many bad trips on Pop Brownies that I go, that's enough. That's where it stops.
Okay.
I don't want anything that's going to speed my heart up like that. I told Winnie the Pooh, call me a cab to Cedar Sinai at Disneyland. So I was like, okay, probably, I probably can be done with the drugs
did,
that pump up the...
How did Winnie the Pooh react when you told him to call
me? He didn't break
the
fourth wall. He gave me a giant Disney, like, hands up in the air, like, I can't help you.
Well, that's the thing. As a former employee of Disneyland, that's what we're trained to do.
Yeah.
Never never to break the fourth wall.
Did you really work for Disneyland?
Yeah. I know it sounds like a joke. You see a dwarf in front of you, you're like, yeah, of course he works at Disneyland. That's a bit, right? But no, I really worked there. I was a bodyguard for the characters.
Holy crap.
Yeah, right?
What did you do before comedy? Day job?
Dude, I had a bunch of day jobs. I did... what did I do? I was like a tutor.
This is up in Sacramento.
Yeah. Well, and then in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
But I grew up in Davis, and then I was a tutor, and then I had like a tech job. I had like a corporate job.
No,
like a 9-to-5. No, no, not a suit and tie job, but like I worked at like a startup company.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that company still around?
No, they sold it, and then like it like dissolved.
Fuck! It's so tough to get a company going and go right. I mean, like everyone's trying to do one now because there can
especially
you know what's
the Bay
crazy
area.
Though. I wasn't a good employee because I didn't buy in. You know what I mean?
How so?
Like,
some company meetings, they'd be like, "And this is our plan," and you'd be like, "I mean, I think it's bullshit."
It was like a social media platform thing. Like it was supposed to be. I'll say it's this company called Ning. Yeah. N-I-N-G. So remember like, I'd say like 8-9 years ago, like Radiohead, Britney Spears, like a bunch of these like artists would have their own social networks. Like you would go to BritneySpears.com and it'd be like,
I remember
log
that.
In, register. It was
like,
that company.
Wow.
Like, yeah. So
50 Cent has his, has 50. His like com. Own MySpace.
Yeah, yeah. This is 50.com. Yeah. So you go and you register and then you share photos and you're like social with that little world. So if you're super into the Mariners, like SeattleMariners.com could have... So it was an interesting pitch, right?
Yeah, I'm intrigued.
But I was like, can you really scale that? Can you really get 100,000 people to log into Facebook, log into MySpace, and be like, wait a second, I got to log into NSYNC.com. Like, I need to interact
again?
With fans. Yeah. Well, I need to interact with fans here.
I just think those bands would... put that out because then whoever joins that, like those are people that are on their watch list.
Yep.
I'm like, okay, this is going to be my fan club president for Selena. Like, this is going to be the person that kills
me. Yeah.
So, like, this is how I like.
I mean, it's a pretty cool. I understand the, and the way they would sell it to artists is like, hey, do you have everybody's phone number and email address of everybody that's a fan of you? Like, you have a million, Instagram followers, but do you know all of their. Numbers or email addresses.
How do you?
I was like, I don't think this is gonna.
Facebook was around. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like 2008. I was like, they're not gonna.
It's really crazy. I remember even when MySpace died and Facebook became the thing.
Yeah.
It was. I remember maybe 4 years in having conversations where people were like, Facebook's like, give it a couple more years, and then something else comes along. I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, this one seems pretty user friendly and. I was like, I feel like they're going to make a movie with Zuckerberg, and once that happens...
Did you feel like they were going to really make a movie with him?
No.
But
it just seemed like too overwhelmingly powerful of a...
Yeah.
And are you now working at this tech company, were you a tech guy? You said you tutored. What did you tutor?
I was like a math tutor and like English tutor. Yeah. No, but like...
Are you still good at math? What kind of math?
I'm better at math than I am at... It was like
high quadratic formula?
No, it was like high school. It was like... It was like algebra. It was like whatever.
Adam's just
whatever.
Saying words that he's
fuck
heard
off.
From like Schoolhouse Rock. Like
fuck off.
What integrals? What were you doing? What were you working with here?
Was that a hyperbola or? Dude, why I remember the quadratic formula is because I remember actively
the song to know it. X equals negative b plus or minus square root.
Damn.
B squared over 4ac all over 2a.
Dude, Brad.
What's up?
That's wow. What's up.
That's. Put a beat behind that.
Dude, I remember...
Like, no, dude, this is very impressive.
Like, yeah.
You'd be hard-pressed to find comedians with actual practical knowledge. You know what?
I thought
about this.
You're
dude,
right.
We don't know anything.
A lot of us are not truly educated.
No, but like, I get it. Like, we're modern philosophers and all that stuff. But I'm like,
do we add any intrinsic value? Like, do you know what I mean? If someone has a heart attack on a plane, if someone, April 15th just happened, if someone needed to just open up Excel, get in your macro game on, and fucking file my taxes, quick and loan style, could any of us here at this festival do it? You'd be hard pressed to find one.
I'm not one. That's
but like,
sure.
Yeah, I could pontificate about the meaning of life and death.
Right. Like,
really?
Like, yeah, what do you? We know we know a little bit about everything, but not enough to like. We're not experts in anything.
Yeah.
The quadratic formula always really irked me because I was like, I know I'm never gonna need this. But yet I like fucking used it in, and also I think it was only applicable for a handful of problems. Like, on the test, it was like quadratic was only used when... I don't even fucking remember. Do you remember?
I don't even remember.
Now we're, like, starting into it. We're like, oh, right, you're right. We do know nothing about this.
Also, in math class, for me, I was always trying to make people laugh, even in high school.
Yeah.
And so, but I would go early every morning to study for the test because I knew I needed to get good grades on it to have a good GPA to get into college. So I would, like, put so much time into it, which was so frustrating because I go, I know I'm not going to ever do anything that needs to do math. And even if I get into this business and become successful, I'll have some super Jewy accountant that's going to handle that for me.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, I just memorized it because I knew that one day I would have to do it on a podcast.
Well, you're a forward thinker.
Yo, let me ask you a question. Yeah. So you had a background in working as Wolverine at Universal Studios, and you worked at Disneyland.
Yes.
This is crazy.
Yeah.
Did you...
All right, we shared war stories?
Sure. You guys both have theme park backgrounds.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But, you know, behind the candelabra, like behind the scenes, were you like, yo, Walt Disney was a genius? Or were you like, eh, it's whatever?
Great question.
Oh, man.
Do you know what I mean? Being around
I'll tell you how I was.
Yeah.
Hey, Walt Ditsy. Walt Ditsy. Walt Ditsy.
That's one of the rejected characters. We had Daisy Duck and Ditsy Duck.
Walt Disney confirmed Nazi, but also, I will say, genius.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you deal with that as a Jew? It's tough, right?
You know what, though? You pick your battles. I focus more on people who are like straight up anti-Semites, and I have no problem owning it, which I've only met a few of in my lifetime. I had a guy do a Heil Hitler thing to me at a show.
Whoa.
Once. Yeah. And that was crazy. And I definitely could have chosen to ignore it, but I addressed it and spent a lot of time on it, and it definitely sucked the energy out of the room for a good 20 minutes.
And then you played Schindler's List at the end.
During
check drops, you're like, no, we're going to wait. We're going to wait a little bit longer.
He has to see what he's supporting.
A little bit longer, Zanies.
I mean, as a Jew, I don't know. I mean, it's so...
One of my friends has this hilarious joke about about Walt and then Mickey holding his hand.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a statue of him in the middle.
Yep.
And they're like walking through the park and, like, looking. And he has an actor. He's like, ha-ha, look, Walt. No Jews. I think that's more Goofy than it
so
is Mickey.
Funny.
No, but I was like, that's Mickey. Goofy's more like, gosh,
oh,
Walt.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
there's
yeah.
no Jews
no
here.
Jews.
Right, both of you are making me very uncomfortable. But, yeah, no, Walt also.
It's crazy.
It's the same thing with Michael Jackson and the whole kid allegations.
Yeah. Dude, this is a great discussion. I think about this with Kobe all the time, too. Did you guys read this article about Kobe on ESPN?
No.
There's this, like, 15-page. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, listeners, tune.
You're a big hoops fan, yeah?
I'm a huge diehard hoops fan.
I love that.
But I'm also, like, I'm big on the sort of psychology of it all. Okay?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So there's this big, like, there's, like, this 18-page article on ESPN that came out. They launched this new thing called the Tribune, I think.
That Players Tribune. Derek Jeter's
website.
That's
Derek Jeter, sorry. It's something else. But it's, like, basically these long essays. And it's a collection of, like, 8 different essays about Kobe. So here we are in the wake of Kobe's retirement. Basically, I read that thing, and it's still, like, it was, like, only 3 days old. But it's, like, the question I ask, is genius worth it? So there's these 5 stories, right? One of the stories is about how, he hasn't spoken to his parents and, like, his, like, father in, like, 4 years. Mm-hmm. The reason being, which, by the way, I totally get, like, hashtag daddy issues. I get it.
Yeah.
I dealt with it myself.
Yeah.
The reason being is, like, his dad auctioned off his high school jerseys for charity without his permission. And he was like,
that cut him off.
Yeah, you don't do that to the Black Mamba. That's crazy.
That's legit crazy, dude.
There's
my dad tried to sell my Cub Scout badge from 4th grade, my wolf badge.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, that's fucked up, like, because he only got 30 bucks for it. I was like, you probably could have gotten 40. No, it's not true. But yo, Dad, if you are listening and you do want to sell some Cub Scout paraphernalia,
go for it.
Hit me up.
Yeah, yeah.
But
it's crazy.
So that seems crazy to cut off. Now, why did he
let's just keep going with the stories.
Okay. Okay.
There's the story of what was the one? Like Nick Young, who's on the Lakers, asked him to sign a pair of like his Adidases.
Yeah.
And just Which happens all the time, by the way.
Happens all the time.
Players, you see them after games trading jerseys. Because they're all fans, too. And they're also like,
don't have a collection.
I busted my ass to get to a position to where I'm on the field playing against Magic or Richard Sherman or whoever. And it's like, and
you can tell he's from Seattle because he just put Richard Sherman in the same
sentence. Hey, dude, someday somebody will be talking about him the way we talk about Magic.
Sure.
But you know what I'm saying? So, like, you're like, oh, cool. Like, I got to this point. So, why shouldn't I be able to take some of these benefits?
Oh, yeah.
So, for Nick Young to do that, it doesn't seem out of the ordinary.
Yeah. So he then took the Adidas shoes, who Kobe used to be with, chucked them in the trash can, and was like, I'm not going to sign them.
Just,
oh, dude, there's another way to go about that.
Yeah. Right.
Maybe say
there's
no
that
thanks.
Story.
Yeah.
Third story. These are great little cliff notes because I don't know if people want to read it or not, but it's a great read. Third story.
A lot of people choose to not read because they know it's out there, and they go, I don't want my hero tarnished. I feel like.
Yeah. So there, did you guys watch the Showtime documentary Muse?
It was amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's about his Achilles injury, then his shoulder injury. He just keeps getting injured. These past 3 years, he's been just riddled with injuries. When he decided to be like, all right, I want all these documentarians to follow me around, he sat down with Gautam Chopra, who's the director of it, on his birthday. Like, on Kobe's birthday.
Okay.
And Gautam was like, the night before, Gautam was like, I can't make it. A few nights before, he was like, I can't make it. It's my birthday. I'd be with my wife and my family.
Yeah.
A few days later, he's like, okay, how about let's meet up a few days later. They meet at this restaurant, the Chateau Marmont, and right off the sunset.
Mm-hmm.
And sits down, and Kobe was like, it's my birthday tonight. And he's like, so you don't want to be with your family, like Vanessa, your kids? He's like, I don't really do birthdays. I'm like, come on, Brad, Adam, how many generals do we do in the greater Burbank, North Hollywood, Sunset Gower area?
A lot, man.
A lot. We do a lot of generals.
Yeah.
I'm not missing.
Tell the audience what a general is.
Yeah, a general is like when you go sit down with a bunch of executives that give you nothing. So, pans out to nothing.
Yeah.
So.
But it was great to meet you.
Yeah, it was really fun these past 45 minutes. I wouldn't miss, like, if my wife was like, yeah, we have dinner, I'm not going to,
No, not for a general.
Yeah, I'm not going to be like, no, I have to meet for this thing. So, crazy. Then during the edit, he took pride in, like, I'm going to be there earlier than all the editors, all the blah, 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 blah. So he'd get to, just like practice, he'd get there before anybody. And so he was there Thanksgiving Day with one of, like, the young editors, and he was so proud of, like, this guy, like, yeah, thank you, you're good. You ignored your family. Here's some turkey and some mashed potatoes. I'm reading all of this and I'm like, I'm not cut from this cloth.
No.
Do you know what I mean? I'm like, this is not worth it.
Yeah,
to me.
It's that thing like,
to be that great.
That game was incredible. His last game was out of this world incredible.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I can't do all these like little things
to get
for
to
the
that
365
point.
Days a year, right? Times all the years.
You're saying that many sacrifices and those types of sacrifices.
And you hear about the Jordan stories, especially like his legendary Hall of Fame speech, where he like goes back throughout his entire life and shames everyone.
Oh, dude, it's one of my favorites.
Who ever like, didn't believe
I've
in him?
A huge joke about this. Yeah.
It like so you look at what he did, and then you look at like Kobe, and you're like, do you want that?
Yeah.
Do you want greatness? But do you want your mind to be
so
like
so how
that?
Much is collateral damage is enough for you, Brad?
Oh, like
how much would you trade?
You can't for me you can't.
How many relationships would you be willing to lose?
You dude, can't I've lost sacrifice three. Family.
For real?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Personal relationships.
Oh, well,
or,
I mean
or just
with
friends or...
with women.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I mean friendships, I mean
and it was like Adam, it's because of the career. Like, and they were like, I got to bounce.
Well, they all definitely wanted to domesticate and like go into the world of like marriage and kids and family and like just slow down and be and do what everybody is doing around them. And I was like, I can't do that and do this, and I'm picking this.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And a couple of them, they were all tough to make those choices, but like, also I didn't even like it was a no brainer, but it was also like gut wrenching, but also like I'm not gonna not and friendship. Yeah. I guess like just innately when you're picking. I mean, those first 5 years of stand up, I skipped so many college friends' birthday parties and whatever because I was like, no, I got offered because I hung around the Comedy Store long enough that somebody drove me to Santa Barbara to do 10 minutes in front of them at a show that seemed like I was progressing, like I was not doing an open mic, I was going, so I'm gonna not go to that birthday party.
I
make a strong effort with a handful of people, and then like thank God like this business has provided a lot of great friendships, so it's like, but you have to make an effort, but I guess I just knew that it was
I had, man. There's a little bit of a sacrifice.
Mamba.
You know?
Well, like, you just, you, for me, it just
kind of. I call it Buhner. Okay, Buhner. That's the
Buhner.
Well,
like, it just kind of streamlined it for me. Like, it really trimmed the excess fat. Like, that friend that you kind of talk to, that you will hang out with if you got nothing else to do, like, those friends all left.
Sure, sure, sure.
Those friends were gone. But then, like, there's still that core that's, like, 5-7 people that, like, okay, I will miss gigs for your birthday, your wedding, whatever. That will still happen.
Right.
So for me, it was actually kind of nice because it just trimmed the fat. Like, it got down to only the people in my life that I actually really want to be there.
Sure.
Yeah. But just that instinct. You hear that and you're – I mean, like, I could never do it to my family. Like,
to that level, I'm just like, damn.
Like, if I found out my
dad
was selling
the DVDs. You were selling – you were like – you were filming your seminal special.
Yeah.
Like, the special that defines your career.
Right.
You're like, your family's not there. Why? I don't know. They sold some of my old shit on eBay.
So,
off with their heads.
So, I didn't tell them
about
it.
You know what I mean?
Probably be okay. I mean, dude, if my mom sold some, like, old fifth grade Cowardly Lion VHS tape from, like, performance, I'd be like, fucking go get that cash, mom. You made me. You supported me single mom style for a good chunk of time.
Wow.
You're kind of a single parent in a way, because
my mom was in India when I was growing up.
Your first 8 years of your life,
that's insane, dude.
Yeah,
so it was just you and your dad.
Yeah,
for the first, and mom was in India getting a degree or something.
She was she was in med school, so she was studying, and then I was living in the States with my dad, and then my dad would go back and forth to visit my mom, and then during one of his trips, he knocked her up. And I actually had a sister, but they didn't tell me about her. So she grew up in India, and then she moved over with my mom. So when my mom actually moved back, it was like my dad, my mom, and then my like 4-year-old sister.
And
I'm like,
surprise, you have a sister.
It was Maury for Immigrants. Yeah, it was crazy. It was nuts.
Were you pumped though? I'm sure, right?
Yeah, I was pumped to see my mom, and then I was like, who is this person?
Bitch?
Who's taking my attention? I totally get xenophobia now. I totally get the Republican agenda of, like, yo, keep these brown people out. Like, I get it.
Because you saw them coming in and, like,
who is this
build a wall.
Eating our gushers. They don't speak the language. I'm trying to make this house great.
By the way,
again.
These are the issues. Yeah. Eating our gushers. Yeah, leave it. There's not enough fucking snacks to go around.
Yeah.
When you're explained, did your dad even, he breaks it down for you, right? He's like, your mom's over there.
They were just like, look, we'll just, I think when I was a kid, they would just do, stuff would just happen in real time. Because, you know, they were, you know, my parents were new to the country, were figuring everything out. So you kind of just got to figure it out on your feet.
Wow.
And they figured, I was super emo. Like, I missed my mom a lot because she would come and visit.
Oh,
and then she'd have to leave, and that was just heartbreaking.
So it would just give you that tease of, like,
she'd see me
this is what it's like
bit.
To have a parent.
Yeah, and then, like, she'd, like, bring, like, Ghostbusters toys or whatever. Boom,
amazing.
Drop them off.
Right.
It's like, I don't want a proton pack. I want my mom.
They had that relationship. So can you, like, not complain to your parents about relationships that you have? Like, in terms of, like, oh, she won't, she won't ever cook for me. You're like, well, let me tell you, your mom was gone.
They don't.
And we survived.
Yeah, like, there's this whole culture right now, like, and especially in the blogosphere of, like, microaggressions. Like, so-and-so said this, and it means this to me. Like, yo, like, the time that my dad grew up in, he grew up in, like, full-on aggression.
Yeah.
Like, India was being divided into two countries, India and Pakistan. So, like, people were like, yo, get the F out of the country.
Wow.
My family's Muslim. So they're like, yo, go to the – they made another country for you. Get out. Like, get on a train and leave.
Yeah.
And so, like, for my dad and, like, my – that's what, like, when they're literally grabbing you, physically grabbing you and telling you get out. So,
well, at least you know what it's going to be like when Trump's president.
Yeah, yeah. When, like,
it'll be real.
When my dad is like, so when I would tell my dad, like, oh, they're making fun of me, he's like, so what?
So what? They're not grabbing you and taking you.
Yeah,
so,
like, he's just
so
did he say fight back? Like,
yeah, he'd be like, fight back. Yeah.
With your words.
But I was like, no, he's just like, fight back. If they try to hurt you, fight back.
Cool.
I was scrawny. I was like, I was like such a skinny kid, man.
You got picked on a lot?
A lot, yeah.
Well, because you grew up in Sacramento?
I grew up in Davis,
Davis, and I'm sure Not a lot of brown people.
What kind of nicknames are they throwing your way?
I mean, we're talking about Saddam Hussein. We're talking
Fuck up. Yeah, I guess that was topical.
It's topical, yeah. Yeah. Gulf War's going on. Yeah,
yeah, you got to give it to him for that.
Yeah.
At least keep it topical.
I mean, yeah. Hey, man.
I was like, even while they were making fun of me, I was like, this doesn't have a long shelf life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, all right.
Well, like when I was fat, kids would call me Jello Jiggler. And I'm like, Jello's not even popular anymore, motherfucker. Like, pick a snack that's relevant.
Right.
Well,
don't you think it made you funny, though?
I mean, I've talked about my. It's 1,000% why I'm like, because I would get teased so much, and I was like, this sucks. And like, I didn't know I was fat unless people called it out to me. I was like, I'm such a happy go lucky kid. But then eventually I would start making people laugh. First of all, I would like fight back a little bit, but also just make them laugh in other ways. That's why I've never considered myself a roaster, because I wouldn't fight back. I wouldn't be like, oh, I'm fat. Yeah, well, you know, I bet your mom's got weird looking tits or shit. I would like do impressions or whatever else. And that became funny kid. And it was like, oh, I'm the funny kid, not the fat kid.
Right.
So when you would get teased, how did you just take it in and then just go home and write?
I was pretty good. Like, I was pretty good at comebacks. But I don't know. A lot of times I just took it, which I kind of regret.
Not like, I mean.
Yeah, but you found an outlet for that.
Yeah.
You can see some of that passion, like, in your truth videos.
Come
on, man. Like, I'm sure there's some pent up. Like, those are so great, too, because, and this is, people can look these up on YouTube.
And this is stuff that you did pre-Daily Show.
Pre-Daily Show, yeah.
Goat Face Comedy.
Yeah.
You, Fahim,
yeah,
Asif.
Yeah.
We watched the one of you doing roasting Ashton Kutcher.
Well, the pop chip.
But
it's like, I feel like all the pent up, whatever you got teased, like, they came, like, because you got fucking.
Yeah, and also, like, fuck this noise.
With comedy, it's like, if you're trying to make a point, too, like, which is great, like, having social commentary. Having be funny, but also like smart. It's like you got to be fired up about it.
Yeah.
Because why are you trying to make? I mean, I think with all comedy, you're trying to make somebody care about something.
It's crazy because there's a lot of comics that are like, what are we like? Aren't we like a lot of comics are like, what is it called? Like almost like antagonists a little bit. Like where they're just like, yeah, who gives a shit? Like,
yeah.
I don't care. Like, I think it's actually. I don't know if it's a weakness or something. I actually do care. Like when like. People are getting fucked over. Like, I actually kind of do care. Like, I'm like, no, this is like.
Well, I mean,
you know how, like, we're always looking for the opposite angle?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, no, that's really good. Like, sometimes I'm like, no, that's like, that's not good. Like, in it makes me mad. You know what I mean?
Well, and Ben, I think that's what kind of helps make you so great on The Daily Show is because you do get passionate about these certain issues. I remember you did one segment where, like, you essentially equivocated Trump to ISIS.
Oh, White ISIS.
Yes, White ISIS, which sounds like a great NBA nickname.
It really does. Yeah. Jason Williams missed
white
out on
ISIS,
that.
Yeah.
It was white chocolate.
Man.
Yeah.
But like,
the killer.
You saw your passion behind that.
Name. Yeah.
Like, you saw that this was not just a bit for you. Like,
right.
You were getting, like, fired up about it.
Yeah. Those are fun. Those are the cool moments.
And I think those are the best bits, the ones that you're actually, like, you have a stake in.
Sure.
What comedy did you see or that your folks introduced you to or growing up in?
I didn't even see comedy growing up, like, because we didn't have cable television. My dad was like, yo, we got eight channels or whatever.
Really?
Channel 3, Channel 13, Channel 10.
Would you try to, like, when your mom would come over, you're like, look, Mom, it's good to see you, but while you're here, we need cable.
College was crazy.
Yeah.
You guys had T3 lines in college, right?
Yeah.
Like, super fast. So there was this thing where there was this within the UC schools, you could have like really, really fast connection. So people on their basically MacBooks, we were all connected to each other and kids were down. This is like the
Napster days.
Napster
era. Yeah, I remember those.
So people were downloading everything.
Yeah.
At like in like 8 seconds.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about every episode of Seinfeld, every episode of South Park,
Right.
Wasn't that insane that was happening?
And like now, it was even better than it is now.
Yeah.
Because, like, now there's all these restrictions on things.
You know, laws.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you got to pay $8 to do HBO Go or whatever the hell it is.
And okay, so you got that's where you got your shit.
That's when I was a freshman. I walked into a friend's room. I saw, like, Chris Rock, Never Scared. So it was, like, 04. It's not even.
Wow.
It wasn't
even,
Bring the Pain.
Yeah.
It wasn't even Bring the Pain. Because the whole time when I, like, first heard about stand-up, I remember it was just the beginning of Seinfeld. I'm like, this is the worst part of Seinfeld. You know, like the opening montage with the brick.
And that's the first stand-up you ever
Laundry's
saw.
Laundry's crazy. And I'm like, yo, this is whack. Get to, like, the story. But then I saw Never Scared, the purple suit. And I remember...
In college.
I was a freshman in college. In high school, I did speech and debate. And I was like, oh, this is funny speech and debate.
Oh, interesting.
That's how you equated it.
That's why I was
in
like
college. I like, to me, that sounds like one of those like
funny speech in a
movies where a guy's in a bomb shelter for 40 years and he comes out like, "What's changed in the world?" Like you're coming into college just going, "Wait, stand up comedy?"
What a great way to look at it. What you just say that again. What you just said.
Stand up comedy is funny speech and debate,
dude, for sure.
Yeah, because you're trying to make your point, but you're making it entertaining.
Yeah, through.
I took a speech and debate class too, and would always try to be really funny, and my teacher, I remember one point, pulled me aside. She's like, "Look, it's clear that you, like, you have a knack for that, but like, try to win these. Like, try to these debates, and like, you're just trying to." It's the same thing when I like play board games. I'm just like not concerned about winning. I'm just want to like be the funniest and make everybody laugh. And she's like, "Try to fucking." And that really kind of like flipped the switch for me, where I was like, "Oh, I gotta kind of like." Like, there's a way to do both.
Yeah.
What about that really? You must have excelled in that.
So, yeah, I mean, it was just like, I don't know. I liked looking at it and, like, I liked seeing, like sides of the argument and then, like, presenting and then counter, like, and then presenting a counter argument. Like, I loved it. It was
and
like,
you had that down, like, innately, and how did you get the comedy part in there? I mean, were you, like, where did you start to find, like, oh, Hassan's got some fucking, like, quick timing? Or was it just always
Well,
there?
Through that. And then I was like, I got fired from all my jobs in high school. Like, I worked at Safeway. I worked at Office Max. I worked at a lot of different places. And I kind of was like, I was a little bit of like a Safeway anarchist, where I'm like, yo, this whole system is kind of bullshit.
That it is. I worked at Albertsons.
Yeah. I'm
and
like, this is all kind of
it
weird.
Is. Safeway That's why I stole anarchist. Shit, because we had no benefits.
Yeah.
Wait, what were your main problems?
Well, with
it?
Office Max, it was like every time someone walks in, you have to say, "Welcome to Office Max. How can I help you take it to the max?" First.
Don't just skip over that, dude. That case in point is why I would fucking fire myself.
And the mind-boggling thing is someone wrote that and thought, this will help us increase sales.
Yeah, and so when you don't say it, you would get like written up, or your manager would be like, blah, blah, blah.
Would you ever try to say it like under your breath, just to like be like, I said it?
Or I'd be like this. I'd be like, "Welcome to Office Max." And then like my manager, Gary, would be like, "Hey, Hassan, say the rest of it." And I go, "I did. You didn't see it. I turned. You didn't see over my shoulder.
Oh,
I
man.
Did see it. And I'll be taking..." So
they had an employee. There was somebody on the payroll who was hired to facilitate if you said take it to the max.
Yeah. It was like,
was there somebody who was especially good at it
with take it to the max?
Yeah, come on. That'd be one guy that was like,
people, there was a couple people that bought in, and like one of Gary was like, he was like, "Sit down with me." Like, he gave me this sort of like this like thing. And he's like,
"Hassan, I feel like you don't know
it's
what
like
that means."
Scene out of Office Space, where he's like, "You don't have enough flair."
I feel like in your life, Hassan, you haven't taken it to the max in another facet of your life, and I think that's why you can't connect with how Office Max does go to the max.
Yeah.
If you want to go there, do you want to go there?
Do you want to go to the max? Do you want to live in this little?
You're like, yeah, dude. Say by the bell. Are we talking? Did you build like some sort of fake set where we can go have a shake with Kelly and Slater?
Yeah. So I was just like, I was kind of like. And then I had coworkers who bought in. They were all in. Like,
wow.
they
drank
chips
the Kool-Aid.
And they were like, "Dude, yes, take it
Kool-Aid.
To the max." Then you have to buy this thing called like Performax or something. You know how at the end of the sale, they're like, "Hey, do you want to? You know, Best Buy does it too. You want to insure this for like $18.99? You're never gonna follow up on this,
nope.
But it's another $30 on top of your purchase." So I used to have to sell printers, and people would be like, Assure Max? Should I get the Assure Max?" And I'm like, "No, you're never going to use it. Number two, like,
dude,
the,
you're my favorite employee.
Yeah,
by
yeah.
The way.
I was like,
I love these guys.
They have built-in obsolescence on these things." So I was like, "Do you know Canon? Like, basically designs these things to last less than 2 years. They build it that way. They don't build it like an old Chrysler. They build it so it's
it will fail. So you have to buy a new one.
So you come back 2 years.
Yeah. Is that most products, by the way?
Yeah, that's most products. They get you off the re-up, man. So." Mm-hmm.
That's why iPhone comes out with a new thing every fucking
year. One of the employees ratted me out and said that they saw me saying that to somebody. But the kid went to my high school, so I was gonna be like, "Look, man, just don't buy it. Just buy the printer." And I was like, "By the way, like, ink is gonna rob you, man. Like, I say you just go to school and you print shit out there."
Yeah.
But this is like anarchy to my manager. To Gary, this is anarchy.
Yeah, you're going against the system, dude.
You're like,
you're hurting sales.
All these counter arguments to what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I was like, "This is bullshit.
Are you a plant? Do you work at Staples? Who the fuck hired you?
Yeah.
What's your real name?"
So when I got fired from there and from Safeway, he was like,
Who's the employee that sees that and goes,
everywhere that
"I've got to make sure that this doesn't continue"?
Everybody.
The guys who want to
nitpickers, man.
Yeah,
there's nitpickers everywhere.
It's why people, when they hear, you know, and they don't have interesting stuff to say in conversations, and they gossip or bring up secrets that they were told not to tell, because they're like, "This will get me fucking noticed immediately."
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But you've like worked at a restaurant or bus tables. There's always those few people that are just like
way too excited.
It has
to
be done this way, and you're like, no, we've lost.
Oh, dude, when I was Wolverine, there was a guy.
California Pizza Kitchen. We've lost. You know what I mean? Like, let's just be honest with ourselves. But I'm looking people in their eyes. I'm like, no, it's the day before Thanksgiving, and we're trying to sell printers. We've lost. So there's no argument you can present to me, you know? But they'll be like, no, dude, they're paying us 1.5x. I'm like, yeah, we're making a whopping $12 on the hour. Okay.
Why'd you get fired from the grocery store?
The grocery store was they had a clean shave policy. And
you were like, I'm rocking this Fu Manchu,
no.
Despite what you think.
I had a little goatee. I thought that was cool at the time. And they were like, you got to get rid of that shit. And I was like, okay. And so then I put a Nelly Band-Aid over it one day. And they're like,
you're like Dwayne Wade.
Take it off. Yeah. And I was like, no. I cut myself shaving. I'm like, take it off. And then I took it off, and I had a good, like, I had a little like thing, and they weren't happy about that. And then
just the nitpicking. I'm so like, like they
micromanaging.
And then one time they were like, there was I was like a bagger.
Me too.
There's this lady with and
crazy life
at between like 5 to 7.
Mm-hmm.
It is busy.
Dude, you're
like coming from work.
Oh, you're just you're grabbing cart. You don't have time to actually get the carts because you're going from one customer to the next.
Baby bottles. So they used to sell Gerber, but not in the plastic things and glass things. They're taking the glass. There's this kid. There's this lady with her baby, and the baby was picking up stuff from the cart and dropping the Gerber and just smashing it, just like letting it go, and it's like smashing on the tile.
Yeah.
And the lady looked at me and was like, she was trying to push her cart out of the aisle to leave, like they had bagged her stuff, and she's like, "Excuse me." And my manager, who was running cashier at the time, was like, hey, mop it up and get, you know, like I had to do multiple things at once.
Right, yeah.
So I'm dealing with this lady's attitude. I'm trying to run to get a mop, and I'm bagging her groceries and clean up the mess that her baby made.
Yeah.
And so while I'm like trying to take the thing, and she's like, the mop is in the way. And I'm like, lady, why don't you mop it? And I'll put the bags in your cart.
Yeah. Did you see this fucking goatee? It's obviously.
Yeah. Look at the goatee. I mean business.
I obviously don't give a fuck.
And then, like, literally, like, 5 minutes later, it was like, bing, Hasan Minhaj, come to da-da-da.
Did you know it was up?
And I was like, yeah. And then he's like, give me your apron. I'm like,
whoa.
Oh, yeah. My
That's like when they fired me from Wolverine. They said, give me your claws.
Stop. Really?
Close to it.
Uh-huh.
That was
what
a
was
sad
it,
day.
What was the thing that you said that when they.
I mean, there's a lot of
but
stuff. I ran
like,
over
but
a kid's
at, but
foot.
At the end, I will
I ran over a kid's foot on an ATV. That didn't help.
Shit.
Yeah, and I just didn't say anything. I stared
Silver
him down
lining,
and
they were like,
away.
You're really capable. They're like, dude, you're. They're like, you're very capable.
Oh, cool.
They're like, I don't think this is for you.
Yeah.
You're very capable, but we have to fire you.
Because you told a lady
they're doing
to mop
you a favor.
Yeah.
So, okay, were you funny in these jobs? I mean, like, where...
Yeah, I think I was funny. Like,
but you've just had this. So, I mean, what you're doing right now makes shouldn't it be surprising to anybody that knows you, right?
Right. Yeah.
Or no?
I wasn't the fun.
Like, how many people, when you got on The Daily Show, how many people were like, the fuck, you do comedy? Like, or that were just so bombarded with, you know, like, I didn't know this was you. I mean.
Yeah, like.
I guess people that know you.
They didn't really know me that way. Like, even some of my friends were like. Why comedy? Like, because honestly, like the people, the regular people, like people that you went to high school with, know three comedians.
Yeah.
So they're like, what?
Yeah, you're not that guy.
Three comedians. Wait, okay, and they know Dan Cook, they know Dave Chappelle, and they know their buddy who they think is a comedian who's really
maybe,
funny.
Yeah,
at parties.
Like they know like three, and then like the majority of people have like never been to a comedy club. Majority, right?
Right.
So they were like, what? You're, and then I wasn't class clown or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, what? But then, you know, I'd been doing it a long time. So after a while, they're like, oh, yeah, I see your Facebook posts.
Did you get support from everybody?
No.
Yeah, I was going to say, like your parents when your mom's going like to India.
I mean, when I was doing stand-up, that was hard, man. That was hard, that was a tough thing. Because I had that same, you're very capable with my dad. My parents were like, you're very capable. You could do a lot of good, amazing things with your life. Why
Other
are you
than,
doing
So
white like, comedy, yeah.
Yeah, they're like, you're smart, like you're driven. Like,
is that typical with Indian Muslim folks?
Yeah, I think just with first immigrants. Like, they're just like, look, like, all right. The United States of America is the greatest social experiment in the world. Like 300 years ago, this country was created on these white people came over from religious persecution. Mm-hmm. They killed all the brown people and they made this country and it was like dope. And like they wrote the Constitution and the layers to it are great and there's so much opportunity and you can legit make it happen. Like there's a lot of really, really cool stuff to do here. So you're going to come here and you're going to play the craps game of life and you're going to roll comedian?
That's not even on the die.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why would you do that?
I would imagine because, and then they work so hard to do so much.
Yeah.
And now they're like, and you're going to do comedians.
Yeah. Almost
like
and when you travel, yeah. if you go to other countries, even like in Europe, you go to Greece, you go to Italy, you go to other places where like their economy is like tanking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get that immigrant hustle of like, I was growing up in like Greece or something, they'd be like, why would you want to be a comedian? Like,
right.
Don't.
It just
don't
doesn't.
Gamble with your life.
Yeah.
Like, you get one life. Like, yeah. don't gamble with
it's
it.
It's like when you tell your parents you want to be a comedian, it's like me telling my dad I want to be a pro athlete. They're like, no, it's just not going to happen. It's not even in the realm of possibility. Why would you go after the impossible dream?
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
And,
so.
I mean, so when you're getting that feedback, is that inspiring you to work harder, or are you second-guessing yourself?
It was a little bit of both. Like, it was like, I was definitely seeing progress in my career. It's like, oh, you do this thing, and you do this thing, mm-hmm. you do this thing. You get a TV credit and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But then, like, my parents would see it, and they would just, like, they'd be so honest about it. They'd be like, they would look at it, and they'd, like, if I did Chelsea Lately, and they're like, yeah, but, like, you're just making fun of people.
Jeez.
Like, it's just so like, brutally
so
honest.
Yeah, strip it down to
like,
its core.
They're like, you're making fun of people. Like, you have no class.
Just holding a mirror up in front of your face, being
yeah,
like, take a look.
Yeah.
Do you like who that guy is?
Yeah.
Because that's who you are.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, but then do
like,
they
no,
see...
it's a credit. It's going to help me get more gigs lead to...
And then I was like a series regular on like a sitcom. I was on like a show with like Raven Simone or whatever.
Wait, what show was that?
It's called State of Georgia.
Oh
it was
God.
On ABC Family. Yeah,
it's amazing.
It had one season, but it was great. It was a great experience for me. Like going, it was awesome.
It was your first like
my
regular
first, like,
TV?
Yeah, like I'm on a TV show.
Who'd you
and,
play?
Like,
what was
work.
Your part?
I played one of the I played this guy named Seth, and he was
wow,
like
most
a
white,
he
most
was,
white name ever.
Yeah,
I'm
was
proud
a,
of you.
Yeah, yeah, it was awesome. And he was Mahondra Delfino's like love interest in like science class.
Whoa.
Yeah, okay. It was dope.
I mean,
was it funny?
It was all
right. Kid comedy, right?
Yeah.
Like, were some of the like
it was a multicam.
Yeah.
So then when people saying how's it going in Hollywood, you're like, well, do you know someone by the name of Raven Simone?
Yeah.
I work with her.
I just thought it was cool. Dude, I just loved like
you were working.
You know how when you're working and you like drive to the lot.
Dude,
you
it's
know,
the best.
A place to put your car. Like, it's
come
awesome.
On. Yeah.
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 It's also when you think about, you go, there was a point when I was arguing the logistics at an Office Max, and now I'm getting to do this. So it's like.
Now I'm hanging out with Raven Simone.
I think there's, I think because we all have had a solid grind before we really got into this and got to experience some success, that like, there's no chance for us to ever forget that part of it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We know we can go back there.
Yeah,
and I mean, while you're doing all this, how does The Daily Show even come onto your radar?
Well, to me, it was one of those things where I'd always wanted to be a part of it, but it's like a million miles away,
right? Like, how do you even do that?
Yeah, how do you even? It's weird.
You were a fan of the show
you
for a long time,
in LA, right?
Yeah.
So you saw like your journey must be crazy because you saw people blow up.
Yeah,
like in front of you, and you saw the whole Dublin's thing. And,
saw Dane going through Dublin's and just wrecking that town. And
so it became more feasible.
Yeah.
But you grow up in like any town in America, like Davis. It's not even like
right.
People are like, there's Southern California. There's the Bay Area. Nobody cares about like Sacramento, Davis. Like you've done the sack punch. It's above a sleep train. I'm not even joking.
it is.
Yeah,
it's great.
Like that's Sacramento. You know,
right?
So it's like, it seems like a million miles away. Then when you come, then I moved to San Francisco, and then I saw all those guys sort of start to come up. Shang Wang, Ali Wong,
made
Al
it a little
Madrigal,
bit more real for you.
But like even there, they were like, "Hey, we're moving to LA and New York." That was a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm doing Premium Blend. I'm doing Live at Gotham. I'm like, this is crazy. But
you
got
to be around that,
Daily
right?
Show,
you're
that,
around people that are trying to do it. So it makes it more, like, okay, now I'm in the camp of people that are around an energy that's building towards that.
What was really good about San Francisco and all the years I spent there was like, it's just about the craft. Like, mm-hmm. it's just about, like, I loved the fact that, like, it was all about the 10 minutes that you got.
Right. Well, because when you're in Los Angeles, it's like, well, I'm doing acting and I'm doing stand up and I'm doing this. And like, and you have all these irons and different fires and all these things you have to be worried about and with agents and managers and stuff like that and the industry in itself. But when you're just in San Francisco, and this is back before communication was what it was, like, you could definitely, like you say, just focus on what you had to do.
And I didn't know why I loved that so much, but then I remember, and it wasn't until years later, then I moved to L.A. and I go to the Laugh Factory the first time. Remember the first time you go to the Laugh Factory?
Oh, yeah.
It's very intimidating. Oh, man. And then you get the... Hey, buddy.
Who are you? Yeah, here. Who do you know? Yeah.
I don't know you, blah, 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 blah.
It's not then, a very that, friendly for you. You can just hang out.
Then there's like sometimes there's like a movie star there that's doing stand-up, and then
it
becomes this whole other beast, and you're like, it's not about that thing I originally got into it.
Yeah,
right.
It didn't all come full circle for me until like John Voyage, the last show John Stewart did.
Yeah.
All the correspondents came back, and Colbert was there. And man, this dude, like, this dude is the real deal. And you're talking about, like, the minutia of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's the minutia of things. And I was like, oh, that's why I love this dude. And that's why this guy is the age that he's at and still breaking ground. What I mean the minutia of things is the way you warm up, the way you spin the ball, bounce it twice, exhale, release. The way you write, like, you write in the morning or write in the afternoon, or the way you get your coffee, or the way you build every day. So I was talking to him about it, and he's like, yeah.
You're talking about Colbert, yeah?
Yeah, just the details, the little details. Of the daily grind of being creative. He's like, basically what we do on the show is like that TV show Chopped, where he's like, you know Chopped, right?
Yeah.
Like they're like, hey, here's some gummy bears, here's an apricot, and
a bowl of Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Make a breakfast burrito.
Make a meal.
Yeah.
Make a meal out of this. And it's got to be dinner. It's like, that's what we do on the show,
on
the daily show. That's what you do on this show. And every day you're just building these sandcastles, and the water will come and wash it away, and you build it again tomorrow.
Wow.
And I'm that's like, man.
That's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you are literally doing comedy that is for that day only, and
that's
then
it.
Gone.
It has the shelf life of bread.
And, and what job can prepare you for that? I mean, that's other than just doing it, right? The idea of just like, okay, everything we're going to do for that day is done after that day.
Yeah.
And you try to come up with a completely fresh approach, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
That's you might be covering similar topics. I mean, obviously, like during the presidential race, there's going to be – it's living under a theme.
Yeah, but if – say Donald Trump leaves, he's going to lose, right? I hope.
Oh, right? God.
Well, because I would like you to stay in this country.
Yeah, yeah. If and when – yeah. I like you here.
Yeah.
If and when that happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that whole bit, which I love doing, Donald Trump is white ISIS, it's like – it's going to be as relevant as Sarah Palin jokes.
Yeah.
It's like, it had its moment. Or
right.
McCain jokes or whatever. So you can't live and die by anything. But that also is super liberating. Like, it's super awesome where it's like...
Well, because if you fail, you get another chance. The very next day.
Yeah.
That's
kind of what we do in stand-up anyways, right?
Yeah. You can try. You just try again.
I mean, do you still live it? You don't live and die by any one show, right?
No.
No. Because you're going to have another opportunity.
Yeah. And what's great about like doing it long enough is that you go, you get enough awesome and bad ones that you just know that there's, you can always recover.
Yeah.
And rebound.
Yeah.
How trippy was doing John's last show when all the correspondents came back and you looked around and thought, holy shit, like there's Rob Riggle, there's Stephen Colbert, there's Steve Carell, there's like all these people that have gone on and done such crazy things.
Nuts.
Like to me it was similar to when SNL had its 40th and everyone came back and you saw what was possible after the show. Like did you look at that and be like, "Oh shit, I'm doing something that all these people did."
I didn't think of it that way. I just thought of like how funny I thought all those guys were. Like, Rob Corddry's so funny.
Yeah.
And
brilliant.
I was like, when working on the show, a lot of the editors and writers have been there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So I would hear stories. And so when I do field pieces, they'd be like, oh, this reminds me of when da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then they would tell me sort of the magic behind that. And that was the best. And so, like...
Like what? Just like...
You know, Corddry used to have that segment where he'd be like, come on!
Yeah.
The John Stossel segment or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So Mark Payone, one of our editors, like he told me about how like the genesis of how that all happened, and like
it's amazing.
It's great. It was just like it's awesome, man.
And those, I mean, also those
that stuff means the most to me. You know, like that's like
just the little behind the scenes details.
Details of just like, but like, how do you make the magic? Like, how does that happen?
Mm-hmm.
Like I haven't even talked to you about this, and it's crazy that we're only talking now through this the microphone. But like, you're the voice of Slimer, right?
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
Besides that great IMDb credit, what I'm more interested in is like, what is that like? Like, how do you do the voice? Like, do you do the voice? Like, how does it work?
Dude,
like,
I don't fly coach anymore. No, it's
Oh, yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's I don't know. I mean, what you want to know? Just how do I do character research? What do you?
Yeah, like, did you come up with a voice? Do they manipulate the voice in the studio?
No, it's me. It's my voice. But it's not this voice. It's not.
How did you come up with
it? Hey, what's up, guys? I'm Slimer.
Yeah.
I mean, I literally listened to stuff and then kind of like really just did my own. You know, obviously I can't do a whole new voice because it is what it is. But it, I mean, I put my own like Adam Ray spin on it, I guess.
Yeah.
Because does Slimer have lines, or is he doing like mush mouth kind of stuff?
It's,
or
yeah, I mean, it's
noise,
all.
Or,
we'll see it in the new movie.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. But I mean, like that. You know, I made like this fake audition tape. I knew Paul Feig didn't want, wasn't going to need somebody famous to do it because it was such a. You know, and he's concerning himself with so much stuff, but I developed this good relationship with him, and I was like, I'm going to – an out-of-sight, out-of-mind thing. I think about that for a lot of stuff. Like, people aren't – people have so much stuff to think about all the time. I mean, same with, like, you know, us. If there's just – you got to make yourself, like, present your case, you know? And
sure. You remind people you exist.
Yeah. And sure. And so I made this fake audition tape and sent it to him, and he was like, oh, I didn't even know you could do that. And it was funny, and because I had a good relationship with him, I was able to send it right to him.
That's
and
great.
While we were – after I shot the stuff that I actually did as an actor in the movie, and he was like, yeah, sure, like, do it. It was just as easy as that. And it's like, you know, he didn't need Jake Gyllenhaal to fucking do it.
although that's amazing.
Although Jake Gyllenhaal did audition. No, he didn't. yeah, I mean, like for like The Daily Show, it's like
– right.
At what point do you – you're a fan of the show all the time.
Yeah, yeah, I was a big fan.
So, I mean, was it like, you know how for like John Renitsky, SNL was like his dream since he was 7 years old. So like, was it?
Oh, interesting.
Like, at what point did it become something that was fathomable that you were like, you know, because you see when you guys would go face comedy, your sketch group started to really like pump out a lot of videos and get a lot of attention. And yeah. Then your true thing started to come out and it was like definitely starting to position you, I feel like, for that world.
Uh-huh.
Don't you think?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
I mean, what point did you take the debate and the comedy and the smarts and everything and go like...
Yeah, I was... I don't know. It's a tough question. Like, I thought it'd be... I just was like, yeah, that'd be really, really cool to do. I was a fan of the show. I didn't... Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where I was like, when the opportunity presented itself,
yeah.
I was like, all right, I know what I want to add to the show. And when you have that thing, I think probably it's like the Slimer thing. When you're like, I know what I can add to this.
Yeah.
So I just submitted a field piece and an original piece, like an original field segment.
Right.
I submitted that and was like, and then John saw that and they're like, yeah, come in and screen test.
I
wrote another original. Yeah.
Yeah. I read a rumor that you credit Ben Affleck with getting you on The Daily Show.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. What he did. So he was on Bill Maher's show. And Bill Maher like does not like Muslim people at all. So he was on the show. This clip went viral at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't talk about it on the show. So when I had to actually screen test, this clip had gone viral. And it's amazing how racism will happen when you need it the most.
Yeah.
And so
it's like, that needs to be a bumper sticker.
It's like
oh, it is in some
sense. Another original piece. I had to write another original piece in addition to what I had sent. And I was like, dude, I'm not Larry David. I can't make lightning strike twice. I can't do curb inside. I don't have that in
so
me.
So funny.
I'm a mere mortal, right?
Yeah.
I'm pacing back and my like back and forth. I'm like, what's going to happen? This thing goes crazy viral. Right?
And this thing is when Bill Maher talks about, I don't know what it was
specifically. He basically was like, he was just cracking jokes about like, look, until we can figure this whole thing out, let's do an internment camp sort of thing. He's joking. They were joking at it, right? They were like loosely joking. Ben Affleck's on the panel, and he's like he's promoting like Argo or something. He's like, hey, whoa, like let's just pump the brakes. I think Ben legitimately was like, we can't go down this train because I can't be collateral damage in this whole thing.
Like, I can't be in the camera shot.
But he did this whole thing where he was just like, yo, like he's like, relax, like we did that to the Japanese. You just can't do that. You can't just like blanket carpet bomb like an entire group of people and like, put them in one place. You can't do that. Didn't work out. So he's like, I'm watching this clip, and I'm like, oh, my God, like, we got Batman. Like, we just got vetted by Batman. And that was the piece. I was like, it's Batman versus Bill Maher.
Batman defends Bill
Maher. And so I wrote this whole thing about how happy I was in that moment.
Yeah.
I was so happy I forgave him for Geely. Like, it never happened.
Wow, that's happy.
Didn't happen to me.
Never that is it. Overjoyed.
Yeah, and so then I just broke it all down and blah, blah, blah. And so
you also have you must know this, like you're very likable.
Uh-huh.
You have great delivery and it's very, as sharp and astute, I don't know if those are the right words, but like without making somebody who maybe isn't as educated feel stupid.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, thanks, man.
So you're very, I never feel like you're talking down to anybody with your shit,
yeah,
which is, I think, a great quality.
But I think the thing that I'm like the most excited about, man, is just like seeing all like comedians that I'm inspired by like doing interesting things, and like that's what I'm doing, you know, with the one man show thing. It's like that's what inspired me.
Yes, one man show, Homecoming King.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And which
it's playing here.
Homecoming. Yeah, King. We're going to it. Yeah.
Oh, for
I'm
real?
Well, I'm going to it tomorrow.
Oh, dude,
yeah.
I would love, dude. I would come on, dude.
I have so many people rave about it.
Really,
dude, including we saw John Roninsky, and he was like. Say like no. This
John
Roninsky
said it's
show.
The greatest show he's ever
Stop,
seen.
Stop, dude! Don't even.
He did.
Hassan, I swear to God, he has no reason.
Come on, dude.
He didn't know we were doing this. He just weird. Yeah. You know,
he just he
we're talking
was
about
bragging.
Shows.
His mom came to the show.
Yeah,
like and she like that was very sweet of.
And
well, John Stewart. But, I mean, dude, he made a
commercial. Yeah.
What the fuck, dude?
Yeah, man, he's the best, man. I owe him a lot, man.
He came to the show.
He's just a supporter. He's just writer. I don't know, man. I don't know what he's. I still can't believe it, man.
I want to before we get into the Homecoming King stuff.
Yeah.
I want to know. So when you get the call for the deal, you go out there and screen test a second time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're feeling
no,
confident.
No, the first time they had just seen a tape. Like,
okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you screen test and basically doing stuff that they wrote or what at this point when you
I did. So I submitted two things. They wanted me to do a Jason Jones like chat.
Yeah.
But I'm not like if you know Jason Jones's persona on the show, I'm not Jason, like I can't kind of do what he does. So what I did is I took the existing material, I changed it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I rewrote it's the same topic. It was about the Koch brothers. And I just cut it. I found the old clip online, I ripped it, and then I edited it in such a way that John still has the same reactions, but I'm doing it through like my voice.
It's amazing.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, cuz I was like
that's really good.
And I think the thing there was like I can't it's like NBA Jam where like I don't have those certain strengths that other people have. I have other things, but I got to show where I have my basketball.
Yeah. Kevin Johnson brings something different than Horace Grant.
Yeah, he has five basketballs and speed. You know what I mean? It's like
I love how he does this right after you said that Hassan you have a way of dumbing down really smart things. You go, it's like NBA Jam. I go, now I get it.
Yeah,
now I understand.
Like, so yeah. I was just like, yo, like this is to my strength. So then I go out and I had written this other piece, and I did it with John, and then I talk about it in the show too.
Yeah.
So I don't want to give it away, but then I got hired. Yeah.
And so then is that what is that? Just break that moment down for me, like,
dude, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, phone call, email. What?
No, he hired me there on the spot. Like, dude, it was unbelievable. It was one
you
of
cry? You submit it, and he just man, says you're hired.
You, like my fiance at the time, my wife to be. She's she was crying. My mom was crying. It was one of the most surreal moments of my life.
That's yeah, so and you great. Knew you had to move to New York at that point too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But that's exciting. That's like
yeah.
Fuck, dude,
it was crazy.
That's so great.
And
but it's like it's one of those things where like I feel like it was also a win for like all of us. How many times have we?
Oh,
like,
for sure, dude.
You know what I mean? How many times have we submitted tapes to like do a half hour, do a set on
any late night show,
whatever?
Yeah. No, you're speaking honestly right now because
nine Vimeo links deep. How many password protected Vimeo links have we sent out?
Hassan, dude, when I heard you say that, it was what you just said is so spot on because. You know, I feel like you and I maybe start around the same time.
Yeah,
just came up on enough Bruco shows together or Comedy Store open mics or whatever to where and also just enough like conversations outside of clubs of just like just reminding each other that we're both still in the grind and like a mutual respect and and so dude, it was really like for sure inspiring and like fueled an extra like put an extra log on my fire for sure.
It sounds like
a Kenny Loggins song, but it's just how
no,
I felt.
No, but you have friends that are like wonder kids, right? That are just like they got that like within 3 years, like every article's about them and every blah blah blah.
Sure.
Like I'm like, yo, dude, no, I played in the D League, like I was undrafted.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, trust me.
And some comics look at when other comics get certain things like a Daily Show or a Saturday Night Live is like a why them but not me. But you also have to look at it as well. Look at these are examples. People are doing it. It can be done.
Yeah.
You can get there. You can get on a Daily Show. You can get a Saturday Night Live. You can get an hour special.
Yeah.
So
but the crazy thing then was when John was leaving, and this was the tougher question.
Yeah.
It was like, all right, you have this thing, right? And it became this thing. The Daily Show became this thing because it, like, innovated. It added something to the dialogue, right?
Right.
Like, content now is ubiquitous, right? Mm-hmm. But there's certain things that are still special, despite the fact that there's, like, 58 channels.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
There's still things where people are just, like, they get into the world, and they'll do subreddits about the world and Game of Thrones fan fiction and this and that, mm-hmm. despite there being just a dearth of information out there and crap out there, because they're adding something special. So the thing, like, John kind of was like, so what are you going to add? Not to this show. Add it to this show, but after this, what are you going to do? And I was like, man. And it got me thinking even about, like, before I had even gotten to The Daily Show, I was thinking about just, like, my own, like, comedy itself, yep. right? I'm like, man, there's a lot of things that I want to talk about in longer form, but I can't do it in 10-minute sets on Tuesday night at the Hollywood Improv. I just can't. Mm-hmm. I don't operate that way. Like,
yeah.
The gears shift in my car, it doesn't work that way. There's certain guys that can in 10 mm-hmm. minutes and 7 minutes. Dude, you get them.
And great. That's a great skill set to have.
And that's amazing.
That's just
like,
not, it's
and
just
I,
not you.
I so admire that.
Yeah.
But I was like, it doesn't work for me.
How
so
early on does John
developing the one-man show.
Okay. How yeah. early on does John throw this challenge at you? Like, was this like
this is when he was leaving.
Okay.
Hmm. But I had already just kind of started to have it internally. So like about a year and a half before I had even gotten the show, I started working on Homecoming King, the show. It didn't have an ending. It was still work. So I started working on chunks of it. And getting the job in New York was a blessing in disguise for the show because New York has theater culture.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now you can develop these things.
New York is actually geographically close to London, which again has theater culture.
Yeah.
London has crazy theater culture.
Yeah.
New York has crazy theater culture. And then Edinburgh and all those European comics, they build their shows that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what was crazy, I was like, oh shit, like when I was in LA, I wasn't exposed to this. I had started working on it, and I was just working out chunks in random places through The Moth.
But there's not a ton of, like, one-man show, small... I mean, there are a lot of theaters in L.A.
Well, it's kind of considered whack. It's considered whack.
Yeah,
I was really hesitant to do it.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's when you, like, you can rent a... In
a black box or whatever.
Yeah, right? Like, L.A., it's like you rent a 22-person theater, and you run your one-man show there.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not... A theater.
But I don't think it's respected even almost.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just.
But have you seen Neil Brennan's show?
No.
Oof.
Three mics.
Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really good. Neil Brennan's show is phenomenal. Mike Birbiglia is a freaking monster.
Thank God.
He's
a genius.
Thank
God for jokes. It's yeah. incredible.
What's the process of
Colin
even writing? So you sat down, you go, I need longer form. I need a bigger avenue to tell some stories and just access a different part of what you're doing than on The Daily Show and on stages at comedy clubs. What's your. I mean, you just sit down and go, I'm going to just start. I mean, do you have like...
It started with one story.
Okay.
And then thematically, there was a thing in that story. I started working on it, stuff outside of stand-up. And dude, I had this thing. I had this moment. I remember it was a few years ago. I just remember I was hanging out with like Fahim, a few other guys. Like we were at Swingers or whatever. And I was like, yo, dude, we got to rise above the 2-drink minimum. We can't live and die in these clubs. I'm for real, for real. Like, you know, Tommy with a mullet cannot tell me what my worth is in this world. I refuse to allow that. I have too much to add to
it.
I'm being honest.
Yeah, dude.
No, but it's true.
And so I was like,
got to come to that realization.
I got to this wall. I wasn't getting past. I wasn't getting past there.
Yeah.
I was still hanging out, and I was like, also like, I was getting like, I'm a grown man. I was getting serious about my relationship. I was getting engaged. I'm like, yo, I got to make some moves.
Right.
And whether. You know, they want to stop me or not, or they're not letting me through this door, I still got to share what I have to share with the world. And so I just started working on it, and I found other places to do it. So The Moth, they do longer stories. You know, they're a popular show on NPR. So I did my stories there. And yes, they were like comedic, but there was like sort of like some heart to it and a message. And then...
Because that's what the whole Homecoming King...
Yeah, yeah,
for
yeah.
people that...
Yeah, and then I met up with... this guy, Baron Vaughn, he's a comedian.
Yep.
Baron was like, you need to meet this guy, Greg Wallach. Greg Wallach is this great storyteller that then started getting into comedy. So he was friends with like all these New York people that were in that community, like Luna's and all that stuff. He started directing stage shows, and then I started working with him. And then he found just like little themes, and he's like, work on that more, work on that more, work on that more. And so then I, over the course of like a year and a half, I came to him with like... honestly like 2 hours, 2.5 hours worth of like just different stories. And then we just sort of started sifting through the ones that worked thematically, and then we cultivated it and just started working it out.
What are these stories? Like, I'm gonna see the show tomorrow, and it's getting, I mean, rave reviews. I mean, you've got your, I mean, didn't you like re up like your you kept extending.
Yeah, we sold out the thing, and then we had to extend. It was
fucking
great,
unbelievable.
Man.
So like for people who don't, if they're like for me going to see tomorrow, what would like what is the overall like a synopsis of the show?
Yeah, I would say it centers itself around a love story from when I was in high school. But mm-hmm. the narrative theme about it is around the saying in Indian culture called Lokya Kenge, what will people think?
Oh,
and
okay.
It's like we found like that was the most pervasive thing in like human existence. Like it's the most crippling emotion.
How are people going to view
what will people think?
Yeah.
Like how many decisions are made out of fear of that?
Interesting.
Major life decisions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Major creative decisions. How many major creative decisions have you made of like, I can't do that?
Yeah, I can't go on this show because what will people say?
Or I can't do that right now. Look who's in the back of the room watching me right now.
Right.
Come on, man.
There's so many times.
Lokya Kenge, man. Lokya Kenge is the most crippling. Dude, every time someone says, look, a star falls from the sky, man. I'm telling you, man.
Interesting.
I'm telling
you.
So
the whole show is rooted in that.
Rooted in that narrative theme. That's the way I wrote it around. Yeah.
And you could do that to...
But it's centered in this grounded story. But you'll see it threads itself here in Act 2. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And is it you on stage, just you the whole time?
Just me,
Do you have videos, pictures?
There's some stuff behind me. Yeah, yeah. There's some stuff, yeah. Like certain things cue to.
When you did the first show, the opening night, I mean, and this is how many months in the works? I mean, just since you started to rehearsing it to finding this guy Greg and really putting everything together, how much work?
How much work? It's been about 2 years now.
Yeah.
But I remember it started off as just a narrative story that I would tell on stage. Then I would do it at different storytelling shows. Then I would do it at comedy clubs.
Mm-hmm. But you knew in the back of your mind you were building it for a bigger audience.
Being I was just trying to build it into something bigger. Then I started bringing my MacBook to certain things, and I would refer to things like this. At the beginning of our
photos.
Even our podcast, wherever. You see this Kobe thing, blah, 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 and I would refer to it. And I wish we had that.
I know.
Don't you wish we'd have
it? Oh, yeah, dude, because it – yeah. Well, I mean, there are some comedians that do PowerPoint shows like that and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But
again, there's a stigma to it.
Yeah.
But if there was a way to, present it.
There's a stigma in stand-up that if you do that, it's like cheating, which I don't get because it's like
spelling it out. It's like it's take something away from your ability to paint the picture. But we just did a live podcast and we were talking about with Eliza Schlesinger at one point about Cher's Twitter and the types of tweets she does. And we had a screen behind us, so we were like, can you pull it up? And we did. And it for sure added to that whole moment.
Yeah, you got to read all these insane tweets
and
right
just
in a row
seeing it too, something about
something concrete.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't
know.
It's not something that comedians fabricating and completely making up. It's like, no, this exists.
Right, right.
Look,
right.
So,
and then it's just a quick tool to get you on board.
Yeah.
And we do it at the Daily Show. And we literally will come out of it's called a SOT, mm-hmm. a news package, and then we'll do comedy off the news package. So Ray is like,
yeah.
Well, the Daily Show. Da, da, da. Barack Obama was in China. It'll immediately cut to Barack Obama lands in China, sits down with Xi Jinping in China, comes out, reaction,
joke.
It's just to be like, all right, this is what it is.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I don't expect you to be well-versed in the nuances of Kobe and Nick Young and Adidas and da-da-da, but if I had it up here and you could see a thing, you're like, okay, I get it.
Oh, I get it now.
I'm aboard.
Yeah.
And then now I can do all the jokes afterwards. I don't know. I mean...
Have you seen a difference? I actually saw you and Trevor in Montreal this past year. That was right when it was announced that he was getting the show.
Oh, at the gala.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, which is great, by the way. And then, was he feeling immense pressure? Have you noticed a difference between John and him? Is it the same show? Is it a different show?
Trevor, man, he's got ice water in his veins. He's a cool cucumber, man. He's super chill, and I think maybe it's everything he's gone through in life.
I guess when you've seen when you've been through apartheid,
Jesus Christ, for real,
putting pressure on you because you're replacing a legend is nothing to him.
Yeah, yeah.
When he's seen that,
yeah. So it's like, and yeah, man. So
was there ever a fear that when you're like, are they switching hosts, that your job was going to go away, that they're going to bring in?
Well, when they didn't know who the host was.
Oh, okay.
Remember, when John left, there was all these rumors of is so-and-so going to do it? Is Chris Rock going to do it?
Right.
And I was like, a lot of times when you take a big, big person like that, they come in.
Clean house.
They clean house.
Yeah.
They disassemble a ship.
Want to do their own thing.
And I was like, man, the fact that they hired internally,
mm-hmm.
Trevor saw the machine. You know, he was a contributor on the show.
Yep.
So he saw all the writers and how brilliant they were.
And he saw Jordan Klepper, and he saw all the correspondents doing well.
Jess.
And who's amazing.
Yeah, Jessica Williams is a superstar.
And I think it's good that he did that. There may have been people that, because it was essentially the same cast, maybe they, like, because people have to realize he's not going to be Jon Stewart. Right, like it took John seasons to become who he was in the show.
Find his voice.
Yeah, and just like any comedian has to do. So it's going to take Trevor time to find out what. And you guys have made minor changes, whether it be the music, the talking right before the show, the camera angles, just trying to make it it's still the Daily Show, but then make it.
But
his
again,
own.
I think that people need to understand is, and I think they're going to get over this, like, you're not the last guy that always has its run.
Yeah.
When Fallon took over Tonight Show, it always has, like, you're not the thing I remember.
Yeah. Right.
John has certain strengths. Trevor has certain strengths. There's things that Trevor does. He's incredibly charismatic. He's incredibly quick on his feet. There's these things that they've been uploading now on the Daily Show, just Facebook page, of between the takes.
Yeah.
He'll do these things at the desk where he's doing material between the takes.
Mm-hmm.
And the material between the takes is freaking incredible.
Wow. Yeah.
Incredible. And I'm like, dude, this is like a huge strength. And I love the fact that they're uploading that.
Yeah.
Because it's super topical and it's like, yeah.
Just more insight. Yeah. And with Trevor, I feel you get that outside, like, whereas Jon Stewart grew up in America. You have the outsider perspective of this is how they may view this from other countries.
Yeah,
and this is how we appear to be from the view.
Yeah, which is a dope perspective to kind of be at the helm.
Yeah.
How is there like a style, like a Daily Show, like comedy style coach when you go in? Because it's a unique, with the interviews and the field pieces. Like, do they just expect you to go, all right, you know what you're coming into? Or, I mean, does Jon Stewart, does he sit down with you and go, like, look,
Jon will look at, you know, he'll come back and look at your edits. Like, he'll look at what you come back with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there was this awesome email that Madrigal gave to me where it was like, Colbert gave it to Riggle. Riggle gave it to, Helms gave it to da-da-da. It passed itself all the way down, and it was like these, like, 10 things to remember when you're, like, going into the interview.
Yeah.
And, like, a couple – they're really great things to, like, remember. Like, one of them was, like, intention. Like, what is your intention in the piece? Don't lose sight of that.
Right. Have a point of view.
And I remember when I came into my first things, I was always just trying to just say, like, the funniest thing.
Yep.
Like, someone's going to say something like, I don't know, this is funny. But
we're listening.
You have to actually, in a 6-minute piece, you're creating a narrative arc.
Yeah.
Like, I sat down with so-and-so, and then I sat down with so-and-so, and then I sat down, like, so what's your intention in each of those things, and how do they thread together so it makes sense at the end? I didn't know that. And just little things like that where it's like, man, that should inform everything, even when I'm doing a chat at the desk. I'm presenting a side or a character, like, what's the intention and all. Well, little things like that. And I'm
sure you're able to take some of that stuff, too, and apply it to your Homecoming King show,
completely. Completely.
Mm-hmm. In terms of creating that narrative.
Yeah.
Intention
and like,
of the story.
You get better with time, and then the field producers are so seasoned. They've done.
I was gonna say that staff. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Like they
want you to win. They're anything they can throw at you that's like, yo, you know.
Yeah, because you hear stories about like Saturday Night Live that there's cliques and people that are trying to get together and make sure that they write together. Like, is that not so much?
No. I don't know if I could survive. Yeah. I don't know if I could survive it.
Wow.
SNL, I don't know.
So it's a very cohesive, supportive.
Yeah. They want you to. I mean, but it's also why I thought it was so impossible. There's only at any given time 5 correspondents, 6. That's it.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? There's not a big cast.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of contributors that come in and they'll do a piece.
Sure.
Like a Kristen Schaal or Lewis Black. But they'll come in every couple months.
What's been your most favorite moment or just like. Piece of advice. I mean, advice you've told us, but like just something where you felt most comfortable. Maybe the moment you felt like really settled into the job and go, I now feel like
I belong here.
Yeah.
Oh man, there was this.
Not that you had doubts when you first got there of like, did they make the right move? Because you know you're there. You know that you're there for a reason. But there's got to be a moment where things come together in a way where you're like, oh man, I'm locked in right now.
Man, it's interesting. It goes back to the Sandcastles thing. There have been certain shows where it's like, it's great. Like, it's phenomenal. Yeah. And then there's certain shows where you're like, eh, that was rough. That act was rough. But again, it's like, we do 100 and 200 plus episodes a year.
Jesus.
So it's like,
yeah,
you can't
sweat the small stuff.
You can't be
right. And if you do a great piece, you can't champion that for a week. You just gotta be like, all right, on to the next one.
Yeah. You're like, here, you share it with people, and you hope that it moves the needle forward a little bit, and then you gotta think about the next one.
You know, do people ever ask you, like, are you trying to, like, change the world with, like, comedy? Like, what do you, like, when you're doing pieces or even with your Homecoming King show, like, is there something that you went into doing all this with as far as, like, I mean, you said, too, when you were, like, at Swingers with Fahim and guys, like, being like, we got to, you know, go bigger than what we're doing and not be confined to this two-drink minimum lifestyle. Like, is there something you're, like, after Homecoming King, I mean, you've probably already, the success of that and what it's done for you and how it's, you know, even helping to shape you and your comedic mind even more, like, are you already thinking past that? Like, oh, dude, now I'm going bigger, like.
Well, I'm just, yeah.
Or you just try to stay very in the moment with everything?
To me, I'm just trying to do those things the best I can, but then take those skill sets and be like, all right, we're going to take this to this, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and do you get what I'm saying? So it's like, man, we're going to take what we learned here. Like, I see a future based on what I've learned and what we're learning sort of on the job and the way the industry is changing, the way artists are in the industry, the way we're creating content and bringing it directly to consumers. I see a future where I legitimately see a reality where, yeah, there's going to be friends of mine, like Neil Brennan directing Nike commercials, also directing 30 for 30s, also starring in their own shows and movies and, like, doing it strictly, like, here.
Right.
Without any other third-party involvement.
Yeah,
I'll call Brad and be like, Brad, I need you to, you know, I need you.
Creating our. Yeah. We're in the way that 50 Cent created his own MySpace. We're gonna, like, create our own networks. Like,
sure,
Like just having our own content,
right?
Right.
But then, like, the skill set that, you know, you're learning, like, through this and then putting it out, like, and then you have, you know, the podcast verticals and all that stuff. I'm like, oh yeah, we're, like, basically learning the business side and the creative side.
Yeah.
And so it's all kind of, like,
I'm doing it all,
fusing into one. So I don't think it's a far-fetched reality within the next, like, few years that, like, creatives will come together, we'll take the money we make from stand-up, we'll pool it together, we'll shoot a thing, we'll present it, we'll take it directly to Sundance or Tribeca and directly for distribution.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that reality being, like, unfathomable. Like, those are the things that I think I'm like, all right, so what excites me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what's the next story to tell, and how do I want to get?
It's also easier said than done to have that approach. I mean, like, a lot of people can will find reasons to make it more difficult than it is, or not consider it to be fathomable. I mean, the fact that you have a show in New York, like, that is, like, extended and run, is fucking nuts when you really think about it.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
but you think how competitive that world is,
right?
And also just to think about, like, where you came from and then getting that job, and just, I mean, dude. That sounds like the dream to me, to be having that show. Like, and if I can be perfectly honest, like, it definitely has, like, ignited a fire. Like,
because,
dude, I lived in the theater. I mean, like, that's...
For real?
Oh, dude, from fifth grade, I went to SC for acting school, was in so many plays. After SC, like, plays, stand-up only came about because I wanted to continue to get a live fix on stage.
Yeah.
So the theater, like, I'm just, like, chomping at the bit to find a reason to get back in some avenue. And, you know, the characters and stuff that I've always done.
Yeah,
like,
man.
It's, and then you doing that, dude, is definitely, like...
Do it,
I mean, I've been writing something for the past year that I'm going to wait to, you know, find the right moment. But it's like, that shit is so... You basically just was like... You know, I think you can get overwhelmed with how intimidating the whole process can be.
Yeah.
But you know, you sat down, you started writing it, you did this, you met the right people. And it's like, you trusted the process, too. Which, right. It's easy to get...
Right.
Overwhelmed by it and go, God, to have a show like that's going to take forever, and then you fucking put it to the side.
Yeah.
Is it going to, any plans to stay on tour, or is it going to stay?
Yeah, we're going to start the tour this summer.
Awesome.
And it'll tour the country. It'll come to LA. It's going to come.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. So, dude, please come. Well, you guys are coming tomorrow. So yeah. So
I'll come by.
Right now it's just doing, like, different festivals, and then this summer we'll do the
amazing
tour.
And then they'll be able to find the dates probably on your website or.
Yeah. Well, I'll be doing an announcement in, like, a month, like, with a couple of really cool things.
Oh.
Yeah. It's gonna be good, man.
Wait. So HasanMinhaj.com, is that?
HasanMinhaj.com and HomecomingKingShow.com. Yeah.
Fuck. Yeah. Wait, are you even still doing stand-up, or is this show, like, kind of replacing that for you?
I still do stand-up, but, like, I kind of have been starting to try to, like, work on, like, longer, take the stand-up and apply mm-hmm. it to something.
So if you go bigger. On stage now, are you more or less workshopping something for another, like?
Yeah, or yeah. There's a couple things that I'm trying to add to the show.
Yeah.
So I'm like working stuff out.
Perfect.
Through stand up.
So it's always in flux.
Putting it there, yeah.
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 I just love and respect people that created their own content that, because people have to realize that if they want to make it in this business, no one's going to come down from on high, touch your shoulder, and be like, "Yes, we have chosen you to be famous." Right. Like, that's not going to happen. Right. You have to make videos. You have to go to the open mics. You have to just. No one's going to ask you to do a one-man show. You have to write a one-man show.
That right? did happen for Lark Voorhees, though. I just well, want to say on record.
Let's be honest.
Like, you are yeah. a beautiful.
Where, what's she up to?
She was.
No. She's still alive?
Oh, yeah. I saw actually.
No, for real.
You have to like pause for a second and be like, wait.
She's
yeah,
one
I don't
of those.
Want to be a jerk. Yeah.
She's definitely one of those questionable. I saw something recently where they did like a, here's where she is now, and it was not favorable.
Damn.
It was a bummer, too. But I bet she's still dope.
Is she happy? Like, you know what I mean?
Man, I haven't called her in a while.
I
do want to say real quick, congrats on about to get married. That's a big deal.
I am married.
Yeah.
What?
I've been married for a year, man.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, I've been married for, yeah.
Follow him on Instagram.
Well, yeah, yeah. Yeah, man.
He has a very artful picture and doing research for this interview, I found out that there was a website that was very sad that you got married. I don't want to.
You're a heartbreaker, aren't you?
I don't want to say
Hassan.
The
yeah.
No,
I don't want to say the name of the website because it was kind of racial, but I don't want to get it wrong and
I'll
sound
Pornhub.com.
YouPorn was like,
but yeah, there was a lot of people that were very sad that you're married.
Oh, man. No.
Where did you meet your wife?
I met my wife in college, man.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
There you go.
So you guys were together for how long before?
We dated for a long time, and then we split up. She was doing the master's thing, and then we reconnected when she was getting her PhD, and we got married here.
Well, that's the ride or die chick. That's the woman,
man,
that's not there because you're on the
time.
Yeah. She's not here because
time.
You're on the Daily Show.
I want to know because I'm the only single dude at this table. Mm-hmm. But I dated, from 19 to 28. So it's something that I will do again. But right now, enjoying.
You haven't been dating,
huh?
You haven't been dating.
I mean, here and there, but also it's just like I haven't. I'm enjoying this time of where I get to only worry about me, and it's definitely helping my focus for career stuff, but also like for family stuff, I'm making more time for that. But I want to know, like, what are the benefits? Like, what having that in your life? Like, how has that helped the career stuff?
Okay, you want me to break it down?
For sure.
All right. So, how are we on time?
Can we do like 5 more minutes?
Yeah.
Five to 10
yeah,
more.
Yeah, sure,
yeah.
Sure.
You good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Great.
Okay. So I would say this, man. Look, there's pros and cons. But I would say the pros for me were this was it for sure, like, just focused. Like, I don't know what it's like, because I've known, when we reconnected, like, 3-4 years ago, I missed the whole swipe left and right.
Yeah,
happiness.
You missed Tinder.
Yeah, yeah, just swipe until you're to find happiness. I missed that whole boat. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's like, it minimized all the riffraff, like all the nonsense that happens with life. Like, oh, who's that chick? Like, what? Did she say something? Da, da, da? Oh, like, come to this thing. There's these girls, and we're going to the blah, blah, blah after the blah, 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 blah.
That's just gone
now. That's gone.
Yeah.
And guess what? All that time is replaced with what?
Well, like, say tonight.
Yeah.
Right? After, whatever show, I'll either, like, hang out with you or, like, I'll go hang out with my friends or I'll go back. I'll go home. I'll, like, sleep earlier, like do you know what I mean? Just like,
dude, yeah.
I'll add intrinsic value to my life, my friend. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I'll be home by 11 p.m. I'll be in bed. I'll be up by 7 a.m. Yo, you know what you can do at 7 a.m. with some coffee? Like,
I do my best writing between
versus,
seven
like,
and
this
nine.
Is like this nonsense that's yeah. nasty. Like,
yeah.
Who is this person? Like,
yeah.
I'm figuring things out. Get out of here, dude. I'm 30. I'm too grown for this. Like, I know what I want to do with my life.
Unless you're trying to write a book on like. Dating in your 30s,
sure,
maybe
sure,
like
sure.
What are you soaking up all
doing?
That experience
what
for?
Am I, wait, what am I doing?
And, you're right. There are pros.
And it's like loud. I need to be. It needs to enrich my life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's books to read. There's people to meet. There's shows to do. There's material to write. There's things to
so
share.
So much
with
to
the
absorb.
World. Yeah.
And maybe you're absorbing the wrong shit.
Right. Then to be a what's your name, Amanda? I can't do that, dude.
Can you think? Do you think those people are finding any? Do you think those people are finding any? Like, are they able to walk away from those things and go like? Like, for me, comedically, like, still being in that world, if I do get dragged to something like a club or a, last night, Brad and John and I all walked around.
I get it.
We drank and we smoked and we were walking around. And we went to, after we got food late night, like 3 a.m, Jimmy John's, they had given away free boxes of bread. Yep. So we took these giant hoagies. We started walking around, giving them to homeless people around downtown Austin. Right?
Amazing.
And we started having crazy conversations.
Oh, I saw that post. That's
while,
cool.
While we were hammered, and then at some point, Adam started chucking them across the street
like Oprah,
like a freaking peanut vendor at Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
Bread. We got your bread. Just freaking.
Yeah. And the guy at the courtyard area came out and goes, "Hey, shut the fuck up! There's people sleeping in here." I was like,
damn.
Dude, is that how you treat a free bread tosser?
Yeah.
And apparently it is. But so, like, for me, I was able to do that and, like, get something from it. And also just, like,
life
the camaraderie,
experience.
Life experience. But
yeah.
I think you're right. There is a point when you maybe have to – the nightclub stuff. Like, if I'm going to go to things like that, I got to go, what can I – afterwards, it can't just have –
well,
come and
is,
gone. Like,
yeah.
What can I pull from it to?
So the con is too that I'm missing that whole thing.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
I don't have like perspective on that.
Spontaneity anymore. Maybe has gone a little bit.
Maybe
no?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like I don't have perspective on like how hard that must be to have that connection.
You have to make more of an effort to find that balance of like, yo, if you do go to a festival and let's say your wife was here, like you go. You decide some nights, like, hey, you know what? I haven't gone out and just tossed bread with some comics for a while.
I'm going to toss some bread.
I got to go do that,
yeah,
though,
go
because, I need to, like, can't completely shut myself down from those.
No, yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure you find other ways to do that.
Yeah, like...
Also, our jobs are so... I mean, like,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah,
like, there's enough
jobs.
Of nightlife. Fun and spontaneity and creative... highs and lows of putting that show together that fills it. Maybe you don't need to be tossing bread in the streets.
Look man, like, the great Charlemagne the God once said, you know, it's life is a balance of ratchetry and righteousness. And so it's like... How much ratchetry do I want to get into? It depends. I'll decide. But so yeah, the focus thing. This other thing is like it is pretty dope to be building something to like move something forward towards a direction. Like,
yeah, rather
like,
than.
But what is this going to? What,
yeah,
what
rather
are we
than
doing?
Just something that you do and then the next day it's like, all right, well, you're gone now. On to the next one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So. Yeah.
But you say maybe when you got to 30, that really put it in perspective. Or before
I mean, she brought that to my life.
Yeah.
Like. And then, like, she just also, again, like really grounded stuff. Like, like, she's just like, yo, life is more than just a deadline article. Call your mom.
Yeah.
Whoa, mic drop.
Samanaz just dropped the mic.
She was like,
after call your mom. Like, let that
like,
be known.
She's like, let me get this straight.
Yeah.
Because this is that, like, I was, like, stressing about pilot season or whatever, yeah. Right? Something to do with that. She was like, let me get this straight. Your friends, you guys are all like auditioning and going crazy to shoot shows, to make, you know, she like we broke it down financially.
Yeah, yeah.
What you'd probably make if you just had a regular job after taxes and commissions. Like you would, if you just had a regular 9-to-5 job working at Enterprise.
If you're taking it to the
manager,
max. Yeah.
Yeah. You make like probably like, let's say it comes out to like 15 grand, right? After taxes and maybe even less, 14.
Yep.
She's like that. And you were out auditioning for like 4 straight months. Like, if you were a manager at Enterprise Rent a Car, you'd probably make more than that. So you're killing yourself, and you guys are stressing out, pulling out your hair to shoot a show that you may or may not see and that you can't even share with, like, your loved ones. It just goes into the ether. You don't even get a copy of it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And how long has it been since you called your mom? It's like a week and a half. She's like, call mom. It's just, like, so real.
Yeah.
It's just, like, so... Like, I could have been, like... Woman, don't you understand my dream? This is all part of the process, like blah blah blah.
Yeah.
But it was that balance that like there's no amount of whatever that's gonna compare to that. Look, I was thinking about this the other day. So Prince just died, right?
Yeah.
Prince died. The moment I found out Prince died, I was eating like Chipotle. Like I was just like, I was like, oh man, Prince died. And then I was like, I just kept eating Chipotle.
Yeah.
And I thought about it. I was like, I'll never be able to accomplish artistically what he accomplished.
Mm-hmm. And that was just an afterthought for you,
huh? He was an afterthought to the avocado.
That burrito. Wow.
He was an afterthought.
He was fucking singing backups to the burrito lead singer.
Yeah. I was like, oh, man, Prince died. One of the most seminal artists of the 21st century. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, fuck. Oh, man.
That's
I got.
They brought Chipotle to work.
That
Sweet.
Is kind of a fucking bummer, dude. I thought about that too because I quit. I thought about it and I didn't think about it. And then I was kayaking today.
Yeah.
And
did you think about Prince? Did you think about his?
Yeah, because people were blasting the music.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So John Reniske and I started chatting about it, but even that chat was 40, 45 seconds.
Yeah.
And then, hey, look at those that group of hot girls running along.
Sure.
Should we kayak alongside of them?
Kayak.
Kayak.
I mean.
So. And then it got me thinking. I was like, oh, being my wife, she's right. That it was like, oh, the only people, like, when it's all said and done, outside of that little, like, deadline article or what's going to happen on the comics, Hasan Minhaj dies, are, like, the five people, seven people, 10 people that mm-hmm. are really, their day-to-day life is going to be, like, different. Aisha, my mom, my dad, being it, like, those are the people that are going to be like, dude, my life is not the same.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I got to take time to, like, call, like, it just puts that in perspective. So there's nothing anybody should be able to say to me or do to me that can should really affect me or my purpose or MO.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Outside
of that. It is.
You know, I don't know. You know?
That, no, I mean, no,
that was deep.
That was
a great pitch to single Adam. That it's also like having that person to check in with. I mean, like, I don't know if you pitch her jokes for the show or.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you?
No, she'll come to the tape. She'll come to tapings, yeah. And she'll mm-hmm. give me, like, honest perspective. Yeah.
There you go. And then from someone who's not in the business.
She doesn't care about it at
yeah.
all, by the
so
way.
She's not, that's what so I want she's not to. Jaded yeah. by any.
That's why I'm starting to, like, pinpoint yeah. certain things I want in whoever comes back into my world. And it's, like, definitely not in the business. I mean, anyone I've ever dated has not been in the business because I'm genuinely curious about all the other worlds out there in profession. So I'm like, oh, I want to inherit something that's interesting to me and that yeah. I can learn about. But yeah. also, most extras are nuts.
yeah.
True.
I've dated but also in the industry before. It's
yeah.
freaking,
there's enough stress on from yeah, yeah. what we're doing. Like, you want to double that?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how people do it.
I don't know how Chris Martin and Gwyneth Paltrow did it for so long.
Well,
he had that Coldplay money. And
yeah,
had,
that's true. Yeah.
She had that Iron Man money.
Yeah.
I'm sure they made it work.
Goop money.
Yeah.
What money?
Goop money. That's her blog.
What?
All right. This is going to be a whole other podcast.
I hope this was it. Was this interesting? I
think
this
was very fucking incredible. Look, we have an audience that's built yeah. in the lobby of this hotel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We didn't schedule
hey, they
this
just
show.
Pulled up.
They just
you were that interesting that they just.
That's is that why those chairs are there?
No.
No, they pulled them up.
They just pulled them up. Oh, they cool. were so.
That's back. I met back last night, and he's a comedy fan, and yeah. I don't know. Marcy.
They just you got them.
That's what's great about this festival is that like people can just roam and pull up and listen to podcasts. Yeah, no, this was yeah. amazing.
Thanks,
I mean,
man.
Since you know, this is it's dope that you've your story too. Like you're so candid with it, and it's so we have so many young comics that listen to this, and so it's awesome when you can. You know, be inspiring without trying. You're just doing what you fucking knew to do. And it's, you know, not only have you inspired me, but like, you know.
Dang, man.
Yeah,
that means
dude,
a lot, dude.
Dude, come on, man.
So, no, man. That means a lot.
Like, there's so few opportunities to get. We're so, I don't know, blinded with just like looking very singularly at like what we're trying to do that like you often maybe can miss out on like, you know, dude, when you're a kid on the bus and you know, you're driving to fucking school, you're looking out at everything, right? And you remember there was always a kid who was like, would try to fuck with people and be like, oh shit, like, did you guys look. And then you'd look and you'd be like, what was it? Oh, you fucking missed it. Did you have a kid like that on your bus?
I did.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I did.
Just because he wanted to make you feel bad.
Yeah. yeah
but
yeah,
it's
yeah.
like.
That kid's name was FOMO.
Mine was Matthew.
FOMO strikes again.
Yeah.
Wow, he had his own catchphrase.
Jesus.
Mine was Jonathan Stetzer. Fuck you, bitch, wherever you are. So as a kid, you're looking for everything. But then once we get like older and we start to focus on shit, you're just so on one thing. So to get inspired, like last night, I saw Martin Short. Shit was fucking
Whoa.
Incredible, dude. Mm-hmm. And your shit, dude, in this show. And like I know tomorrow is going to be like another log on the fire. And it's like in this business, you're so focused on your own shit to like open yourself up to those things around you that can really like everybody needs a boost, you know. And
yeah.
Whether
yeah.
you get it from a conversation or somebody send you an email or just after a show, somebody you respect being like, yo, that was dope. I'm sure people have come up after Homecoming King, right? I mean, just
yeah,
name
cool.
a couple.
That's been cool.
Right?
Man, this was crazy. This was the coolest. Trayvon Martin's brother and D-Ray McKesson, who's running for Baltimore mayor. I do a little like shout out for Trayvon in the show. There's like a little tag about it in the show. His brother came to the show.
And you didn't know he
from
was
from Baltimore? I didn't know.
Wow.
D-Ray's from you know, Baltimore, and he's running for mayor now, but he brought Trayvon Martin's brother, and like they came upstairs afterwards, and he was just like, hey man, that means a lot. Like, blah, blah, blah. That was cool. That was one of the craziest.
That's insane.
I'm sure as he introduces him to you, you're like, oh crap. Like, you're thinking back to that line. You're
Emperor
like,
he's mad. Coming to the show. That meant a lot to me.
Yeah,
I look up to him so much.
Yeah, dude.
And he's a guy that does these one-man shows.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
for him to come see you.
And for him to be like, man, it was really funny and blah, blah, blah. And I was asking
it's
him
awesome.
For like advice and notes and stuff.
I mean, it's awesome.
That's
doing,
the best, man.
You're doing amazing things. And I love that it's you still keep going and you still take time for family. And, yeah, like, you're like I get most of my news. I'm one of those guys that gets most of his news from the Daily Show.
Yeah. Whoa.
From John Oliver.
That's
from,
crazy.
Yeah, from Larry Wilmore.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's
watch, by the way, watch Samantha Bee's show.
Yes.
I do. Sam's I used to do the promos for it. Yeah.
You do the promos
for it? Well, I do all the Conan promos for TBS.
Are you serious?
So I was doing a lot of them for Samantha Bee, but then they were like, oh, we should have a chick do them. So now it's a chick. But I did the first like 10 or so.
Nice. Yeah.
Oh, she kills it. She's a gangster.
A beast.
Yeah, dude.
I'm so glad I got to work. Like, oh my God.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's killing it.
So yeah, just know that you're now going to be a part of something that inspires other people to
do
things.
I hope so. Oh,
and no, you don't.
Just
have to
don't get too big time that you don't want to throw bread with us tonight. That's all I'm saying.
No, what are you guys doing tonight?
Jimmy John's or I don't know what other sandwich
Subway,
shops.
Quiznos.
I'm not throwing Subway bread at bums, dude, because that shit is not real bread.
Yeah. Quiznos is toasted, so it might hurt more. So
yeah,
I'm
was
not sure.
Soft. Jimmy John's was it was a box of just 6 foot hoagies, dude.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
They just have to get rid of it after the
yeah because it wanted to be fresh the next day. So they have to get rid of it.
Jimmy John's is so good, though.
It is good.
God, all right, it's so good.
Do you want to go get Jimmy John's?
I need to get some food.
All right, okay, let's do it. Hassan, you're the man. HassanMinaj.com right, for Homecoming King tickets and all the info.
Thanks, guys.
And you're the man. Love you.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or AboutLastNightPodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.